Welcome to the Horse Grooms Podcast on the Equus Radio Network, where horse care, horsemanship, and the people behind the horses take center stage. Horse Grooms is dedicated to empowering grooms worldwide through education, community, and industry support. Discover expert insights, career-building opportunities, and the Horse Grooms Insiders Membership, brought to you by Horsery. You can't be everywhere at once, but with the Horsery AI-powered stall monitor, you can keep an eye on the horses in your care with live video and intelligent alerts, so you'll know when something may need attention. Because when it comes to injury, colic, or distress, minutes matter. Learn more at horsery.com and use code HORSEGROOMSPOD for 5% off. And now, here's your host, Danette Nudaboom.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Horse Grooms Podcast. Today, we are not talking about horse care, but about caring for the people in our industry. I first reached out to our guest, Sonja Ochetlik, after reading a very personal post that she shared on Instagram. You can read that post in the podcast article on our website. Sonja wrote the post after a member of the Irish equestrian community passed away in June. She also shared some of her own experiences with depression, anxiety, and asking for help. In her post, Sonja said that she had often thought about speaking more openly about mental health, but then doubted herself. I think we do need to talk about it, through personal conversations, but also publicly. I know that many more people in our industry struggle with their mental health than we realize. That is why I reached out to Sonja, and I'm glad that she agreed to have this conversation with me. If this conversation helps even one person feel less alone, or encourages them to ask for help, it has been worth having. So we're here with Sonja, and we don't know each other at all, but I read a beautiful post from you a couple days ago on Instagram, and it was a little bit about your sister, but mainly about Shane, an Irish guy who passed away, I think, last week. And that's why we're here together, to talk about mental health problems in the horse world, basically. But like I said already, you and I don't even know each other, and there might be a lot more people who don't know you. So could you introduce yourself, please? And then we're going to start talking about the topic.
Okay. My name's Sonja Ochetlik. I'm an American show jumper who lives in Ireland. I've lived here for the better part of a decade. My husband and I run a small stable together, producing and sourcing horses. I actually have a relatively unremarkable career. I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico, born to a very unhorsey family. So I sort of fumbled my way into having a career because I really like horses. So yeah, I do a little bit of everything, but mostly we produce and sell young horses. I literally sold steers and lambs so that I could afford a pony, and convinced my mom when I was 15 to let me quit traditional school and go to online school so I could work full time, and worked as a working student and then as a groom and then as an assistant. And I've just tried my best. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's also the link with horse grooms, of course, because you have been grooming your own horses and maybe a couple of horses for other people and for your husband, I believe, also.
Yeah, we have a small yard. Like, we only have 9 stables. Doesn't always work out that we only have 9 horses in work, but we have a lot of young people, rotate them through the stable, and we just kind of groom for each other. And like I said to you when you messaged me, I guess I'm a rider because I do compete in internationals and like national Grand Prix, but I still twist my own horse's hair, so, and
yeah.
muck out their stable, so
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're hands-on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's also what happens in Europe a lot with people who own their own horses. You just do everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's go to the topic, to the reason why I reached out to you, because you recently shared a very personal post after the loss of Shane. What was it about his passing that made you feel you needed to speak up again about mental health? And I say again, because, well, you can explain that.
Well, yeah, I've posted about mental health a few times, but sort of strange, but recently I'd been seeing a lot of my sister Gina in the world. And I don't know, I don't want people to think strangely of me or anything, but she doesn't visit me often. She's passed away. And for weeks prior, I kept thinking about making a post again because I kept seeing her in the world. But I have a hard time with being perceived. I'm actually quite shy initially, and I have a lot of anxiety about how people will take me up. But anyways, I woke up in the morning to the news about Shane, and it really affected me. Like, I felt heartbroken, really. I don't want people to perceive it as me being a part of a loss that isn't really personally mine, because Shane was an acquaintance to me. But having had severe depressive episodes myself with some frequency, it just really broke my heart to think that someone I knew, even in passing, felt that way. And also the outpouring of love that I saw for him. Sorry. And he just was a special human, obviously. He was somebody's baby. He was somebody's best friend. So it made me sad to know I didn't know like such an amazing person better. I actually wrote that post earlier in the day than I posted it, but I didn't post it originally because I felt like maybe it wasn't mine to post, and I didn't want to be disrespectful to anyone. But I was having a conversation with a friend, and that friend told me that the reaction of a person who is a young man that we both know to the news, because she was quite upset about it, and his reaction was that he considered it to be a normal possibility, like that it was a part of life. And it's not normal. It shouldn't be normal. I don't want anyone to feel the way that a person who's depressed feels, and I don't want someone to feel that that's just a normal consideration. So that's why I ended up making the post. And I have to be honest, I'm a little bit overwhelmed at the amount of people who have seen it and it resonated with, but I'm happy to have made it. I guess not too happy, but happy to share so that hopefully more conversations, I guess.
Well, that's also why we are doing it, and I thought your post was beautiful, but also the reactions that you got on the post were beautiful, and it appeared to be that it's very necessary that we do keep talking about these mental health problems and mental health in general, because it's so important. So you write very beautifully about your sister Gina. You say her death didn't define her, but it did change you. In what ways has it shaped the way you look at people and at life today?
Gina is more than her battles with mental health, is kind of what I mean by
I
that.
am.
If I'm being really open, my sister Gina struggled quite a lot, but was very private about her struggle. I know that she had some di multiple diagnoses, but she never shared them with me or my family. And she never actually, until much later, told me directly about her own struggles. I actually experienced her struggles when she had a breakdown, when she was visiting me, and I knew we needed to get her help. But I didn't really know that she had those struggles before, and that made me very sad. And we had a discussion about that, and it made her sad that she didn't really understand how much I had struggled. My sister was very, very loved and very well supported, and we tried very hard to get her help. I think none of my friends really knew what was going on because I felt it wasn't my business to air my sister's business. But it was an incredibly difficult few years towards the end. I still have a lot of guilt over not being better equipped or knowing what the right thing to do. Out of respect for Gina, I'm just going to kind of leave that part at that. But the second part of the question about how it shaped the way I look at people and life, I suppose I think I'm a lot more understanding of people's behavior now. Not that I understand them, but rather sometimes I just think, well, maybe that person has got some shit going on and that's why they're like that today. Or maybe someone has an absolutely fabulous looking life, but you don't know really what's going on. So I just try to be a good person in general and be a good friend. But we all make mistakes. Like I had a good friend who was going through a terrible time in his personal life, and I didn't know until like literally years into it. And I'm sad that he didn't think I was a person he could tell. So I just kind of want to be a person people can trust, and I want to be a person people can feel comfortable around. So, not to be cliche, but you don't really know what other people are going through day in and day out. So, I suppose I just have a lot more grace for people than I used to, and I myself am trying to be more open.
That is beautiful, having grace for people, give cut them some slack, and yeah, there can be a reason that they act the way they act, or yeah. Hey, you also have been open about living with depression and anxiety yourself. Was there a moment when you realized I need help, I can't carry this alone anymore?
Well, if I'm being honest, it actually wasn't realistically that long ago. I had anxiety and depression since I was a child. I did go to therapy as a kid when my parents got divorced, and I think doing that was important, but I was pretty young. If I'm going to be very open, which I don't mind because it, again, doesn't define me, it's just something I have to manage. I recently went through psychiatric assessment, and I have a severe anxiety disorder, all three types of ADHD. I'm still here. I managed to manage a business. I have friends. I'm trying to live a nice life. So it's possible to, quote unquote, have those things and still be living in a good way. I think people should start saying that they have a mental health diagnosis, as common as being like, oh my gosh, I have a bad left knee. Or I broke my foot a few years ago and it still gives me a good bit of bother and I have to go to physio for it. Anyways, my sister passing really affected my health. She passed away in 2021. I had some physical illnesses prior as well, but my own overall health really deteriorated. I was super sick and unwell all the time. My depression and especially my anxiety was really horrible. I was physically unable to do the amount of work I needed to do, which put a strain on my relationship with my husband as we worked together. I could barely ride. A friend of mine was helping me with a horse. It wasn't going well. I literally couldn't even put my right leg on. And he asked me, like, what is going on with you? Like, you don't ever not do what I'm telling you to do. And I told him I physically just couldn't do what he was asking me to do anymore. And like pretty bluntly, he said, you should fix that. And I was like, okay. So that gave me the shove I needed to kind of address my physical health. In 2024, I had a total hysterectomy and endometriosis excision. And I thought, okay, for sure, everything's going to be better now. Like, I have a doctor who listens. I got this major surgery. I'm rehabbing and it's all going to be, great. But it wasn't. That part of my health is better, but I still had like a ton of body pain and fatigue. And I just kept getting injured. Like, and I would get re-injured over nothing. And I was doing tons of physio and I was like doing all the right things and managing my diet and going to all sorts of doctors, and but I was just sort of limping along. And so I said, well, maybe my mental health needs addressing. Maybe this is all just like a negative outlook or something. I don't know, because I was willing to try anything to be better. But I really hated traditional talk therapy. I hate self-help books. I hate positive thinking mantra things. I don't know why. That just isn't for me. Really helps some people, not me. I don't want to look at myself in the mirror and tell myself I'm great. That makes me want to puke a little. Like, I just don't. But despite supporting my sister, I was incredibly aversive to being medicated myself. which was kind of retrospectively very silly. But I finally had a breakdown in front of my doctor, and he was like, "Look, you've tried all these other avenues. You've really given it a go. Why don't we just try some medication?" And being medicated allowed me to see a lot clearer. And then I was kind of able to move through it. I started working with a sports psychologist who helped me reframe a lot of my thinking. And now I, participate in self-care, which I didn't really do at all before. And that can look so different for everybody. Like for some people, it's retail therapy or making time for friends or setting aside time for themselves. I actually just put my phone on Do Not Disturb and I hang out with my dogs and read a book. I get acupuncture monthly, which helps my body pain. And before I would have been like, oh, I don't want to pay, every month to get acupuncture because that's money I could be paying for my horse to get acupuncture. But I have to do it and it makes me better. My husband is a lot more understanding now. I want to be really clear that he was like never cruel to me or anything. I wasn't communicative of how bad I was. But he now sees now that I'm a lot better, how different I am again. But these days, like I will literally, his name's Johnny. I will literally say, "Sorry, Johnny, not working today until the afternoon because I just can't do it this morning." And he says, "Okay," and off we go. Having that support is really, really critical. So that's why telling someone you feel some sort of way is important. I had to learn that the hard way. I even tell him, like, this situation with a client is causing me stress, or that person talked to me too much while I was trying to concentrate, and now I have no idea what I just walked on the course. And we have a system and we manage it. And it's nice, okay, he's my husband and I have him to lean on, but if you don't have a Johnny of your own, you make the team around you, whoever they are, aware of those sorts of things, so you can be well supportive. And I think if they're not willing to do that, then you need a new team. That's it.
Whether it's your team in your barn or your friends or your your family, you cannot renew, but that's what you mean, right? The people around
Yeah. Well,
you.
you can have a found family. Yeah. But yeah, the people who support you, like if you, yeah.
If you work with horses, you know you cannot be everywhere at once. Whether you're at a horse show or at home after barn hours, you still worry about the horses in your care. That's why I've been very impressed with the Horsery AI-powered stall monitor. Horsery is a smart camera made for horse stalls. You can watch your horse live whenever you open the app, and it alerts you if your horse is rolling a lot, laying down more often than usual, or when someone enters a stall at an abnormal time. That's why organizations like Wellington International, Kentucky Equine Research, and Cornell University trust Horsery. You can't be everywhere at once, but Horsery can help you stay connected when you're away from the stall. Visit horsery.com and use code HORSEGROOMSPOD, that is HORSEGROOMSPOD, for 5% off your stall monitor.
I think you have mentioned, or you have answered my next question already, because you told me that medication is more something for you than the traditional talk therapy. But I think you've talked about that enough, so we'll go to the next question, and that is about the horse world. The horse world can be wonderful, but it can also be lonely, demanding, and exhausting, as we all know. Do you think people in our industry struggle more than we realize?
I think point blank, everyone struggles more than we realize. But yeah, it's a hard industry. I think, people aren't necessarily transparent about how their businesses are really doing or what they might be struggling with the industry. Like if they're having a hard time with the horse because, you don't want clients to leave or, an owner to be upset. And so I think sometimes, but I think that's getting better. But I do think social media in our industry is somewhat to blame, because it paints like such a lovely picture. But I also don't really totally hate on social media because I live far away from my family and a lot of my friends, and I love getting to see updates of their lives, and I love getting to reconnect with people I otherwise would have lost contact with, or even make better friends or new friends. But I think at that, it's really the same as before. Everyone has to take what other people's lives look like on the internet or on the outside with a little spoon of salt, anyways.
So the next question is, one part of your post that struck me was where you talked about men, friendship, and how something as simple as a hug or saying, "I'm glad you're here," can matter. Why do you think vulnerability is still so difficult, especially for men?
Well, I'm not a man, so I can only answer from observation. But I think vulnerability is different for a lot of people because it involves risk. Like being open means giving someone a chance to judge you, reject you, misunderstand you. And I think for men, especially, that risk is amplified by cultural expectations around like toughness. A friend and I were talking about this the other day. You watch like the Italian writers or the French writers, and they're men and they can kiss on the cheek, right? Even the Dutch writers, you might see them at the shows. They have a little platonic cuddle on the couch to watch their rounds or have the chats. But you know, the Irish, they're an amazing people, but they're hard people. Like their boyos here are hardy, hardy bucks. And even the language they use to describe the horses, like if a horse is going well or it's a really good horse, it's a total machine or it's some weapon. And that language is like inherently hard. So the culture is inherently hard. So I think people just need to be comfortable saying, I'm not great right now, just like they would say their knee is a bit sore. And in cultures that are hard, like here in Ireland, we have to undo some of the stigmas, like crying is okay, a hug or a wee cuddle between your friends of any gender is normal. Like it's literally scientific fact that hugging and other types of affection is good for your body and your brain. Taking medicine for your brain isn't bad. Having a hard time coping isn't the end of the world, but you get some help. Getting the help is the normal part, you know.
I really love what you're saying. I think it's it would be great if everybody would live like that. It would be helpful, I think. Next question. After everything you've experienced, what are some signs that tell you somebody might be struggling, even when they're trying to hide it?
I think that's quite a hard question to answer. There's like resources you can look into about people with drawings and symptoms to look for and that sort of thing, but I wouldn't want to claim to be any sort of expert on it. I'll just use like a personal scenario. I have a few good friends who know that if I don't text and Snapchat them all day long, then something is up. I'm on my phone 24/7. My friends live all over the world, so I just am. And if I've gone quiet, they check in on me. And same goes for them. So I just ask them, you know, why are we quiet today? Because we could be quiet because we're busy. You never know. But normally, that for me, the check-in is good enough. It lets them know or me know that someone is thinking of one of us, and just the knowing maybe gives them or me a little perk up, and then tomorrow can be a new day. Like sometimes it's just nice to know someone's thinking of you. So I can't say I'm an expert on like what a sign is, but I myself try to make an effort by sending people things, or I always try to tell people when something has reminded me of them. Like people, I think a lot, I like literally probably too much, but people cross my mind a lot. And even if I'm not great friends with them, I like to just tell them, like, oh, you crossed my mind. I also joke a lot, and I think it's healthy. My mother and I started the joke, but now it's with a number of my friends that I'm the complaints department and the complaint line is always open. And I think that for a lot of people, it's just nice to have like a little moan about it, whatever's bothering them or stressing them or irritating them, even if it's like really heavy or it could be just something really stupid. And then go back to life. And at the end, I always tell them that, like, your complaint has been filed. And it's nice to know that someone else knows, even if there's nothing really to do about it.
It's not easy for everyone to reach out to that person, but it is nice if you have friends like that. That's at least a start, and hopefully people will use that. Next question. In your post, you wrote that love isn't exactly enough, and that's a very powerful and heartbreaking observation at the same time. Knowing that there are no simple answers, what can we do as grooms, barn managers, riders, trainers, owners, and friends to better support each other and create a community where people feel less alone?
I mean, I guess we sort of just said it. I suppose being open, which is obviously easier said than done. I think creating a positive workplace and a positive community and being a positive person. I mean, I don't walk around all sunshine and rainbows. Anyone who actually knows me knows that I love a little pessimism and some dark inappropriate humor. But you can love a little bit of dark humor and still be a positive person or have a create a positive place around you. I worked in some really awful places. I didn't know any better, but like straight up, I allowed people to abuse me in my career, which I know is not uncommon in this industry. But now I don't want anyone that I work with to feel that way. So I try to meet everyone where they're at. Like, if you're sick, you're sick. If you're moving slow today, all right, we're on a go slow. Need an extra day off, guess what? The world will keep turning. It's a really serious industry in some ways because there's a lot of money involved. And I can really appreciate that and the risk that, anybody investing in it, whether it's as a hobby or as a career. And how serious that is. But really, at the end of the day, we are glorified farmers who ask horses to jump over painted lines. Like, have a little bit of fun. Tell someone how great you think they are. Tell them that they are smart when they have a good idea. Compliment people. I don't know, just be a good person. We could just try to be good people. Oh, I don't always succeed, but we can try.
I think that's also like a big part of the answer on the to the next question already, which is grooms and horse care professionals are often caring for everyone and everything around them. Horses, riders, owners, schedules, and teams. What do you think our industry could do better to support the people doing the caring, the grooms, and make this a healthier and more sustainable profession?
I think being a groom is one of the hardest jobs, and grooms are super dedicated to their horses and their riders. And so I sometimes think grooms have a little bit of a hard time letting go. I know myself, I do. Like, I work 7 days a week, but I'm self-employed, so that's on me. So if you're an employer of people, the people you employ need days off, and they actually do need to be encouraged to take days off if they're, maybe a little bit of a micromanager type of groom or something who doesn't want to leave their horses. Like, I totally understand that feeling. Like, nobody mucks out as well as I do. I personally think that. But like, so people like that need to be kind of encouraged to let go and take a break. But people need adequate pay, adequate living, just like any other profession. I think if you can't afford to pay someone correctly or give them a sustainable way of life, then you need to look at your own business model. Like, why is a groom or a rider getting shafted because you can't financially afford to keep them correctly? That's not on them. That's on you to, owners or, business owners to, manage that aspect of the business. Oh, my
Yeah,
dogs.
your
Now my
dogs.
dogs are
It's fine.
barking
That's fine. We don't hear them. It's fine. And even
at
if
me.
we would, doesn't matter.
Okay.
We're all horse people. Yeah. So adequate days off. Make sure your grooms take them and rest. So
Yeah,
basically
rest.
rest.
And just and encourage that rest is good and the yard is going to keep going if the groom takes a day off and leaves their horse for a day. I know it's very difficult, but it needs to be encouraged as much as it's a ne as a necessity, but it needs to be encouraged as well.
Okay, then I have two more questions, but I think the second to last one you also answered already, because that is you train, sell, manage a yard and still do much of the daily horse care yourself. How do you balance caring for horses when you're going through a difficult period mentally or physically? And I think the answer is that you make your surroundings, the people around you aware that you're going through a difficult period, right?
Yeah, and I understand I'm lucky in that he's my husband, but you make your whole team, even people you work with, your grooms or whatever, or other grooms, sorry, or your rider or whatever, you just have to tell them, let them know. Because if you're just running around like an angry curmudgeon, that's not helpful either. And if they know, they can give you more grace. But if they don't know, they just think you're being an angry curmudgeon.
Well, unfortunately, I also know from grooms who have said it to their employers and then they don't really deal with it the proper way. So there's still, for all of us, there's a lot to learn about mental health and about treating people properly. But this is at least a start. If you don't speak up, you for sure know that you're the people around you don't know, correct? Okay, last question. If there is someone listening to this right now, maybe a groom or a rider or another horse person who is struggling and feeling alone, what would you want them to know?
I would want them to know that they're not as alone as they might feel. The horse world is incredibly rewarding, but it can also be demanding and isolating and emotionally and physically exhausting. So it's pretty easy to believe that everyone else is coping better than you are, but many people are struggling in a way that you can't see. Reaching out for support is not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of courage, I suppose. Whether it's a friend, a family member, another professional that you know, just talking to someone can make a tremendous difference. If someone is in a dark place right now, I would say please stay. There's an ebb and flow to life. Life is a lot of work, but we only get one of them, and the world and the people who care about you are better with you here.
Oh. Well, thank you so very much, Sonia. I think I really appreciate that you wanted to do this because I think and I know you agree that being open about the mental health is very important, but it's not easy to find people to talk about it. So I really appreciate that you wanted to do this, and I hope this conversation will help maybe only one person, but I hope it will help people listening to this.
And one person, if it helps one person, that's enough.
Yeah. I agree. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Contact Danette online or visit us on the web at horsegrooms.com and join us for another episode of the Horse Grooms Podcast every week right here on the Equus Radio Network.
This episode of the Horse Grooms Podcast is supported by Shelley Paulson Equine Stock Library. Over 20,000 authentic equine images and videos ready to license for your brand, blog, or social media. Real horses, real moments, real life with horses. Browse the collection at shelleypaulsonstock.com.
Behind every great horse is a great groom. That's why horsegrooms.com and Equus Television invite you to become part of a growing community dedicated to supporting the people who care for our horses every single day. Horse Grooms is a platform of resources, education, and support for grooms by grooms. But it's much more than that. It's a movement dedicated to keeping true horsemanship alive, helping grooms learn from one another, advancing the craft of grooming, and creating healthier, more sustainable careers throughout the equine industry. Join us for our monthly Horse Grooms meetups, where you'll connect with fellow horse professionals, share experiences, gain valuable insights, and become part of a community that truly understands your passion. And don't miss the Horse Grooms podcast on the Equus Radio Network, featuring conversations, education, and inspiration from some of the most respected voices in the horse world. When you participate, you're helping make the best care possible available to more of our beloved equine partners. You're supporting the next generation of horsemen and horsewomen, and you're making a lasting impact in an industry we all love. Together, we can strengthen horsemanship, support grooms everywhere, and build a brighter future for horses. Learn more at www.horsegrooms.com.